one another. And it is not something that is impossible. It is something you have to give yourself to. And that's the significance. You got to work it. And understand this, that there's nothing that is unnatural about having a very close friend, a friend that will do anything for you, a friend that you will do anything for. But it is also fairly common to have friends that are really only friends in name. They don't have that willingness to go that far for someone else, that willingness to insert themselves so deeply into that relationship. And I've often told young people when they become Christians is don't hesitate to share the gospel with those that you come into contact with as the opportunity affords it. If you do that, you're going to lose some friends. But if you lose those friends, chances are they weren't good friends anyway, or even friends anyway. They may be friends in name, but if they allow a good thing that happens to an individual and the desire to talk about that thing to come between them because it's annoying to them or because they have changed and that change makes them no longer appealing, then they weren't truly a friend in the first place. And so friendship is something that can be and should be extremely intimate. We need to be close to friends. We need to love friends. And that's something that is indicated. It's especially the case in the Lord's Church. Okay. Now the other thing, just so we can find some example of what this intends, is in 1 Samuel 19. The next chapter, verses 1 through 5. We are told there, on this occasion that Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants, that they should kill David. So Saul actually told Jonathan, you know, this friend of yours, you need to go kill him. Okay? So Jonathan, Saul's son, he delighted greatly in David. Here's their friendship. Jonathan, verse 2, told David, saying, my father Saul seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning and stay in a secret place and hide. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are. I will speak with my father about you, and what I observe I will tell you. So David has to hide. This is a dangerous situation that they are in. Jonathan gives him word to hide out, and I'll try my best to sway my father, who has told me to kill you. I'm not going to kill you. I'm not going to do that. But he says in verse 4 of the text, Jonathan spoke well of David to his father, said to him, now this is the king, this is the monarch. Sons have lost their lives for speaking out against their father. We'll put it that way. So it was not just a simple thing. Now they may have had a very good relationship between them, but it didn't change the fact that no matter what the circumstances were, Jonathan was going to speak on behalf of David because of the covenant that they had made, the covenant of friendship that they enjoyed with one another. So this is what he said in verse 4. He spoke well of David to his father, said to him, let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he's not sinned against you, because his works have been very good toward you. For he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistine, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it, you rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood and kill David without a cause? Now we know all the examples of Jonathan looking out for David and his efforts to help him escape the hatefulness of his father. He was able to persuade his father for some time, but it came time when he no longer could, and so he sought David's life. But this is something that was an indication of a close relationship. And what it indicates is that Jonathan was willing to do anything he could for David. And especially in regard to saving his life, in contrast or in opposition to his father who wanted him dead. Now, I do want you to note it was reciprocated. I put that in the article that I wrote this week. Because after Jonathan and Saul died in battle, then there was a man by the name of Mephibosheth, I think it's the way. I can't remember the exact name of the man who was of the family of Saul, who was taken in by David because of Jonathan. As the kindest, Mephibosheth? What? Yeah, that's the one. Okay. Mephibosheth. Sorry. The word got mixed up in my mind. I studied it earlier this week, but I haven't done a good job with that name. But anyway, as a result of that, his family, if he ate at his table, his family was taken care of. So David took care of Jonathan after his death as well, because he was kind to Jonathan because of what Jonathan had done for him. So this was a reciprocal relationship we find in this case. We hear more about what David received because that was the narrative that needed to be shared with God's people. But David likewise loved Jonathan in the same way. Okay? All right, questions, comments about this particular indication of particular friendship? There are others that we had mentioned. We'll not go through them, but we're familiar with them. Ruth and Naomi. We're actually, when we get into thought questions, we'll discuss them a little bit. Ruth and Naomi in Ruth chapter 1. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Or as the Babylonian names are given, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. In Daniel chapter 1, verses 6 through 17. We have in 2 Kings chapter 2, the great prophet Elijah and his progeny, his individual who followed after him, which was Elisha. And there is something to be said for their friendship as well and what they did for one another. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 17, we have Paul and Timothy. We have Jesus in John chapter 11 with the family of Lazarus. Lazarus, Martha, and Mary, and the great friendship that was seen on that occasion. We'll talk a little bit about that. And then Jesus and his apostles in John chapter 15. I added to that in verse 14 of the text, Jesus' statement to his disciples, "You are my friends if you do whatever I command you." This is not a parallel friendship in this particular case, which is an amazing thing about Jesus. Jesus was their Lord, but he was also the one that washed their feet. So Jesus was a friend to them, a greater friend to them than they were to him. In fact, as we see with regard to their leaving him during his time in tribulation before his death. But the fact is that they had a great love and kinship for one another that was fostered in the years of ministry that they had together, their willingness to sit at his feet and learn from him, and they're living together for that period of time. So they were great friends as well. Okay, so the important thing, though, anybody have anything? We're going to talk about these in a little bit when we get to the questions. If you think anybody wants to add before we go on. The second lesson that we're going to talk about, the second point here, is what friendship accomplishes. Let's go first of all to Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verses 9 through 12. So I'm going to read Ecclesiastes 4 and verses 9 through 12 for me, please.
Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But one of him is lonely falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand it, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken.
All right, so looking at that last phrase, I mean, the entirety of this text emphasizes basically the same point. But a threefold cord is not quickly broken. What is indicated by that? I mean,
strength in numbers.
Okay, strength in numbers, good. Yeah, that's that idea. And of course, the illustration is a simple one. Whether it's sticks you're breaking or ropes that you're trying to pull apart, the more you've got, the more strength that there is. And it is an interesting thing to see that. One of the things that is interesting to me is on meme on Facebook or TikTok or whatever, is someone will get a small watermelon and they'll start putting rubber bands on the watermelon. You put a one rubber band on the watermelon, it does nothing. But if you keep putting rubber bands, eventually rubber bands constrict that watermelon and in fact it will explode. You just have to do enough of it. It's an amazing thing to watch. You put another one on and they kind of step back, and they put another one on, they kind of step back, and then the last time they put one on, boom, it just explodes in their face. Because the more you put on, the more strength that there is. And there is some truth to that. And it's something to keep in mind with regard to friendship. God never intended for us to go at this alone. It would be truly a difficult thing for any individual to make it to heaven without the help of his friends, who are likewise spiritually minded. Fortunately, God has supplied friends to accomplish that task. The old phrase, no man is an island, is what we can consider as having some truth to it. And so it is a good thing that we have friends to help us on the way, because that strengthens us and helps us.
Yes, sir.
Okay, it looked like you're
doing great. I had a thought, but I was smart enough not to say it.
Okay. Well, it may not have been this illustration.
When you think about that, sometimes those friends aren't available at the time. Moses was cast out. How many days did he have to go across the borders of that? And he didn't find nothing, so that would be collapses.
That's kind of an interesting thing, that in the beginning of Moses' ministry, per se, God was his friend. So, God never forsook him. So that's a good point to make as well. Yeah, one of the things to keep in mind is that friends can be fickle. You don't want to be a fickle friend. You want to be steadfast and helpful. But when we see for Galatians chapter 6, for example, that we need to bear one another's burdens, there is that realization that each one shall bear his own load. And sometimes that is the case, that it becomes difficult. It becomes more difficult if the friends are not available to you. But that's one of the primary reasons why we want to develop these relationships in our congregation, so that no one among us reaches that point where they feel alone. They know that if they need help, that there are individuals who will help them, and individuals that have that love and concern for them. So that's a good, important thing. There are other things that we'll mention in these passages. 1 Corinthians 15 kind of goes in opposite, so we'll talk about those fickle friends in a little bit about this. 1 Corinthians 15 is evil company or evil companionship corrupts good habits or good morals. Think about the translation that you read. So you need to pick your friends well, which is another good thing about having a ready repository of friends in a local congregation. Just think about how God has supplied us to where we know that we can pick up the phone at any time and we can ask anyone in this congregation, can you help me? And they'll say, yes, I can, or maybe I can't, but brother so-and-so or sister so-and-so can, or I'll help you get some more help, or whatever the case, the assistance, where no one's going to say, no, it's too much trouble. I'm not going to. We've got examples of that in Scripture, of a man who was asleep and didn't like his neighbor coming to him and asking for something. No, leave me alone. I'm sleeping. But really, Christians aren't that way. I've seen it interesting in my own life when someone's called me. It doesn't happen very often, but it's probably had a few times in my ministry as a preacher. Someone calls me in the middle of the night and say, hey, I've got a problem. And they always are very apologetic for waking me up at that time or for taking me out of those things that are needed, but it's not an imposition, because we're family, we're friends, and that's an important thing to consider.
I don't know if you being friends or family, which one's more apt in this, but I've heard plenty of cases where somebody just, whatever, you know, you're driving to Tennessee or whatever in the world, and your alternator explodes or something, and call your dad or something like that. He's like, I'm 3 states away. But he calls somebody, and somebody calls somebody else, and before you know it, you know, there's a congregation just 20 miles down the road, and they wake up somebody that it's not even like, hey, Stan, I called you, and you know me. They don't know this person at all, but they still get up in the middle of the night to come and help this person that's, you know, whatever, 1,000 miles from their home. Because they recognize that bond, even with people that they've never met. And so you got to recognize that it's there. And we don't take advantage of it enough. Like, taking advantage of that and relying on one another strengthens each other. And, you know, God talked to Elijah. He's like, you got 7,000 friends you don't even know about. You know, you're here moping in a cave. You got friends all over the place.
Good point. So in saying that, while we are emphasizing in our lessons right now the importance of our congregation becoming more friendly toward one another, members, do understand that that is something you have no matter where you go on this earth. And this is another thing that I've truly enjoyed, because I've had opportunity to go preach in other congregations and spend a week in someone's home many times. and to preach for a group. And by the end of it, they're giving me hugs and shaking my hand and telling me how much they appreciated it and so on and so forth. And if at any time I need to go back, or I need their help, they're there ready to help me. And as Justin said, even if they don't know me, they're ready to help me because they know someone else who knows me. And that's something that is a precious thing for us to enjoy. And it comes as a part, because I've seen people in the world and they have nobody. No one's interested. It's kind of interesting, you know, on Nextdoor Neighbor, which is kind of an app about, kind of like Facebook, except for Zoom. And you'll have every once in a while someone who will make an appeal to anybody out there who could help me. And you generally have individuals who will help. Sometimes what they're asking for is not something that most people want to be interested in or involved in. So they're kind of without help in the world because they've not develop those relationships. But those relationships are instantaneous for Christians because of our commonality as Christians. We're going to talk about that a little bit as well.
So, and you can see people on Nextdoor reaching out just for contact, right? And so, far be it from us, if we ever let something like that happen in our congregation.
I'll spend a lot more time on the internet than I did. I wouldn't know Nextdoor.
Well, I just give that as an example.
I'm just saying, there's so much of that. Nancy knows a lot, but I mean, I stay as far away from that stuff as I can because to me, it's not tangible. It's not, it's out there in the ethernet. And there's so much of it that's wrong. So much of it that's wrong. Going back to Tennessee, if you go to the Eastern Bloc Church, we usually go west, and there's not a lot.
Not too many of them, huh?
I mean, you go to New Mexico, Arizona, and places like that.
There are not enough people out west. They have big churches, but you'll still find a little help from time to time. Interesting thing about that Nextdoor situation is, generally the people who will respond to such appeals, someone who's isolated and alone, are people with Christian values. They'll talk about their Christian values and why we're doing this, because we love our fellow man, we love our Lord. And this thing works, put it that way. But it's especially beneficial for us if we're in that relationship in a local congregation, one that is faithful to the Lord. It's a great thing that we have because God has supplied it to us.
Well, and Nextdoor is meant to be local, right?
Yeah.
Like it's supposed to be your neighborhood, and you can see it physically. Even if you're not on the internet, like, you know, at my old house.
Oh, really?
Every time I went up, well, I'm saying, it existed before the internet.
Right.
Right?
It like, being
in my old house, I go out and mow my yard, and this dude from three houses down, every single time would come down and talk to me. And I knew it was just because he was lonely, right? He was a widower, and he was like 80, and he's like, there's someone to talk to. He was looking to reach out. That's why James says, you know, visit the fatherless and the widows, because it's just recognized need that so easily can come to help.
Good. Let's go through the last four very quickly. John 15, Jesus said, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for his friends. There's another thing that can be done, but understand, we're talking about this level of commitment for one another. Lay down his life for his friends. And of course, that's what Jesus did. He is our ultimate example in that. But again, you know of people who are willing to do this. One thing that comes to my mind when the assassination attempt on Trump that a father did, it was a family thing in that case, but the first thing he did was dive on top of his entire family, his three, I think he had two daughters and a wife, and he died, but he saved their lives. And that willingness for your friend to say, okay, I'm dropping everything. I'm going to try to protect you. I'm going to try to help you. I'm going to try to do what I can for you. Is the true friendship that we're talking about that should be present in the local church. Three things from Proverbs. The one we've already read is iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the counsel of our friend, the countenance of his friends. So this idea of pinging off of one another and growing stronger as Christians by such efforts, whether it be study or whether it be example or whatever the case may be, is important. But there are also two things in stated in chapter 18:24 and 27:9. First of all, in 18:24, a man who has friends must first himself be friendly. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment, but keep that in mind. You have to first be friendly. In other words, you can't expect to have friends if you're not being a friend. And then the second one, ointment and perfume delight the heart. The sweetness of a man's friend give delight by hearty counsel. And that word hearty, I thought maybe that means good counsel. But it really means counsel from the soul is what is intended. So I'm really interested in you. I'm interested in your plight. I really want to help you in any way that I possibly can. And that even those expressed feelings. Have you ever had someone who, like during a funeral or something, they would love to help, but there's nothing. Words can't help, but they're going to be there. They're going to do what they can. I'm sorry if I can't help anymore, but I want you to know I'm here. And that hardiness is in itself something that is coming to us. So those are the things that are mentioned in that. So let's get down to the thought questions. We're trying to do this quicker every time. Get down to some theories too. But taking each passage concerning great friends in the Bible, what is the most outstanding characteristic of each friendship? Well, it's about what's the most outstanding characteristic in your mind. This is your own personal mind. There's no good, right or wrong necessarily. But your mind, what is the most outstanding characteristic of the friendship between David and Jonathan? Okay. So there is a couple of times expressed love, the closeness, the souls were knit together. Loyalty, that's a good one. Okay.
Putting the other first.
Do what?
Putting the other before yourself.
I put faithfulness. Jonathan, no matter what, he was faithful to David. David was to Jonathan. Okay, anybody else?
Selfless.
Yeah, a lot of these things are going to have pretty close to the same answers, but there are different characteristics that we can talk about.
Sure, that had to be. That had to be remarkable. I thought a lot about that, especially when these whole sections started coming out. Something new, like,
yeah.
I really got kind of irritated. And I've known, the only thing that I have that's that close is Jess and myself. And that's maybe a shame. When you think about the kinship that they have, that's what that is. It's a kinship. It's an likeness of mine. It is so fast. To go against his body. He, knowing that he can himself
improve. Yeah, it was a remarkable thing. I think that there's a lot I could say about that with regard to the distortions of that, but that idea of how remarkable the relationship it was, and one that was very important to know in that regard, which is one of the reasons why they tried to ascribe that to something ungodly. Because, oh, that means look how good this is, and this is wholesome and healthy and such, and that's not what it is at all. How about Ruth and Naomi? We're familiar with these, them as friends. What would that be? Yes?
I would love Ruth and Naomi along with Elisha.
Okay.
From the point of view of Elisha and Ruth, it's a steadfast devotion to their friend. Elijah tested Elisha three times to try to get him to stay back. So I don't go all the way. Ruth is
same thing.
When the other one left and went home, she refused to go.
Steadfastness, that's a good point. It's easily a good thing to get into. Anybody else? I put the sacrifice, specifically referring there to Ruth's sacrifice and leaving her homeland in order to go with Naomi. It was a great little sacrifice that was there. But that's the one side of it. Although I would say there's probably sacrifice that would be involved in Naomi taking her under her wing, and Boaz the same in regard to that. Daniel and his friends. Not much about their friendship that is found in Scripture, but there are a couple of points to be made with regard to them that we could refer to in friendship. What is that? Anybody? How about their commonality in their faith? Okay. So we have these individuals. They were all from the same place, all about the same age. All came to Babylon at the same time. All suffered as a result of their faith. And while Daniel's got the preeminent position in it, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we talk about them with regard to the one thing that happened with them, the testing of that faith. That commonality that they would not eat the king's delicacies, and they would do they were together in regard to that. And I wanted to emphasize the importance of that commonality. Right? Okay, then we get into Elijah and Elisha, the steadfastness in faith. I put the kinship in purpose and person. They were very much the same in regard to that and had the same purpose. So that's another. What else? Anybody have anything else about Elijah and Elisha? Courage. Talk about that. Then we get into Paul and Timothy. What about Paul and Timothy?
Respect.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Is it necessary that all friendships be completely equal?
This is not the rule that Jeff just was talking about.
Yeah.
All
okay. Yeah. Father, son, relationship, spiritual kinship.
Paul saw the good.
That's exactly right. So we're talking about a mentorship here. When I went to India, I was very glad to step aside and let Bobby Holmes get most of the attention. It came upon me because of the culture. He was too important to be talked to. So they talked to me instead of him because he was Papa. He was the big gun. As soon as we went back home, they ignored me and they sent emails to him constantly. It's kind of a peculiar thing, but to be his Timothy, that was something that was a real honor for him. That mentorship, where you have someone who is teaching you and mentoring you, and you have someone that you can dispense your advice to and to develop, that's a very important thing. And that is a dynamic that should be present in any congregation.
And also that during the course of those relationships being developed, they don't always get along. There's questions. There's disagreements between those guys.
Yeah, it happens. Did with Paul and Barnabas, didn't it? As an example. Okay, how about this one? We get to Jesus and the family of Lazarus. What was the significant aspect of that?
I would say the familial relationship that they had, almost like family. Because I think as far as we know, Jesus' own brothers are not living in until after his death. My friend James, brother Beats did, he was very close to them that way.
Okay, good. A familial relationship, that's good. I had tenderness. That was the primary thing that I got from that. He wept at Lazarus' death. He dined with them, as was indicated. One of the most precious things is when Martha was a little bit scattered, she went to him and said, please, do something about Mary. And his tenderness toward Mary is something that is amazing as well. She's chosen the good part that shall not be taken away from her. So that kind of tenderness and familial relationship is good. Then we get to Jesus and his apostles. No closer relationship than that, no. But what is that? Jesus as an example, a singular purpose to do God's will. Jesus as an example. This would be that mentorship, certainly, to the nth degree. The washing of the feet, as is an example of them. But I do want to know that after his death, once they returned from his resurrection and became witnesses, each of them were singularly determined to serve the Lord until death themselves. And so there's that devotion in return that was present there. Anybody else want to add anything else to any of these? Yes?
I think the one commonality that they all have is that they look beyond what was right in front of them. They all look for the goal. So that friendship, they don't necessarily just, I mean, look at the fall of the dire situation that he was in, so, but he found happiness, and when he worked with people, he looked beyond what was right.
Very good. Okay, let's go on and we'll go through quickly a few of these others. That was the long one. Discuss what it means that in order to have friends, a man must himself first be friendly. That's kind of an obvious one, isn't it? So you can't expect people to like you unless you make an effort to like them and express that like. Anybody want to add anything to that? Okay, then we go on to question number 3.
Sam.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to say, back to 2, friendship isn't passive either. It's more than just liking someone and them liking you back. You have to actively cultivate that friendship.
Good. Being friendly is not just saying, hey, I like you. It's actually expressing that friendship by action. Very good. Question number 3, who do we want to be our greatest friend?
Jesus.
Hey, good deal. He can do the most for us. He has the greatest affection and love. He laid down his life for his friends. And then question number four, is the commonality that we have as Christians sufficient to make us great friends? If not, why not? Okay, rule says no. I had yes for probably a very different reason. What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't mean to know the actual sense of this mean that what you did or just said, it cannot be passed.
Okay. So you have to cultivate.
You can't. You know, how many times have we heard this? A daughter often, your Church of Christers, if you're familiar with denominational churches or
sectarian
view of things. You know what that means. And that's kind of what they are. It's disappointing. Jess is working on it.
Yes.
It's how she grew up. But she's not so much like that. Just give that an example. Most institutional churches are like that. We have to guard against that.
Okay. The cultivation is an important thing. The point that I was making is that the fact that we all have that commonality gives us immediately an affinity toward one another that we work together in that way. That should be enough for us. In other words, you say, well, I don't like him because he's a Christian. You've got to like him. You've got to love him. You need your neighbors, your friend. That's something we have to keep in mind as well.
Yes, sir. Before we go further, I can go, I don't know that I got to like him. that's part of the thing. Like in the last thing you said, who's our greatest friend? And I was like, all right, what do you mean by greatest? Do you mean largest, most powerful, something like that, right? You stated just a second ago that he can do the most for us, but that's not really how we base our friendship. So I'm not going to be your friend. You can't do anything for me. You know, that's not how that works. So if we're saying the greatest or the best or the closest, sometimes it's hard to feel close to Jesus because you can't sit down and just have a conversation with him, right? But also it's hard to feel closeness with folks that you don't have a lot of things outside of the Bible in common with, right? Like, I mean, I'll listen to y'all talk about fantasy football, but it's like, all right, whatever. Feel like good. It's very appreciated. But you're going to have a closeness with each other that I'm never going to have with you. It's not, because we don't have that much in common. So, I'd say, you know, we have to love each other. We don't necessarily have to like each other. Now, I might say you can't dislike each other, but there's a difference between not liking and disliking. And so, on two, I put that empathy and consideration is the answer there. That we need to have that empathy and consideration. And again, it's kind of back to what I said before. I'm not sure if the line drawn is friendship or family. But you have to have that consideration. And I ended up putting on my to-do, be all things to all people. Because when I invite, say, group four into my home, right, there's some of the people in group four that I just naturally bond with more than others. And you have to put conscious thought towards it. I'm not a friend to you the same way I'm a friend to a mom. The same way I'm a friend to Audrey, the same way I'm a friend to Dennis, to Bryce. And you need to be considerate of that. And empathy is one of the things I've struggled with forever. And that consideration is how I try and deal with that empathy so that I can be for each person what they need me to be for
them. Gotcha.
Gotcha. Have you ever had someone like what he's talking about that you don't have a lot of time with, or maybe have a little bit twins for them, and they sort of do. And you may not have a lot. This has happened to me. And you may not have a lot of time, and then you're one of your best friends.
It can happen. And again, understand this, we're talking spiritually here.
Right.
And so these are analogies in a sense. We're friends. Certainly, we have become physical friends, but we're friends in Christ.
That's what I'm talking about.
And that has to be there. And family and friends are not one or the other type of thing. It's a different way of expressing some of the similar purposes. But what I did want to emphasize in this is the warmth of friendship. And so there is a platonic, you know, you have the different kinds of love, it's agape love, and you also have a phileo love, brotherly love. It's an affection towards your brethren that needs to be cultivated. And that should be done for all, even though it's very true that we have affinities with others more than some. And we're not talking about everybody has to be the same with regard to intimacy and such, but that has to be developed as best we can in those relationships. Because not seeking to develop those things, chances are, again, if you're not seeking to do so and being all things to all men, is that there's a chance that you're not going to get stronger as a congregation because there's not that coalescing that takes place. So again, you've got your own way of putting it. Language and all is very similar, but we're all pulling in the same direction in that regard, and friendship is a way to put that very well. Okay, so then the to-dos, just for a minute. Still don't get to it.
Just do it.
Talk with your friends about Christ so you can find out what your true friends are. Okay, and maybe save a few of your friends. Focus your attention on your brethren. Develop relationships with them, like hospitality or the accepting of hospitality. Even simple things like game playing. We had game playing over at Justin's and had a blast with it. Scribbles. And we laughed till we cried as a result of that. And that was good for our relationship. Eating together, going to a ball game or a movie together, staying after services to strike up a conversation. All of these things can be used to help develop those relationships. You need to do that. Offer help in accord with your abilities. Work on cars, plumbing, baking and cooking, cleaning, medical help, keeping kids. That's part of being friendly in regard to that. Writing cards, et cetera, et cetera. Some of y'all may have some other suggestions.